This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
Well, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
It's a little childish and stupid, but then so is high school.
Show episode 246. My name is Dave. I'm your host and the co-host, Mikey. Hi, Mikey.
What up, Dave?
And over there with a crisscross applesauce eyes. Hi, Pinky.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Tommy over there on production. Hello, Tommy. Sean, high five from Sean. Just came in for a nice cold Gatorade after working outside on the studio. Sean, thank you very much. First one here, last one to leave. Nobody hears him talk anymore because he's so busy working. Dr. Earl in the house with us once again. Dr. Earl, our Terrence Malick historian, Whit Stillman fan, the ginger-haired wonder, and Terrence Malick apologist. Dr. Earl, how are you?
The doctor is in and doing great. Thanks, guys.
The doctor is in.
The doctor.
And on the line with us, a good friend of mine and first time on the show. I think he's listened to about half of one of our episodes before, which is cool. So he's a fan. He's a lifetime
That's
fan.
More than me. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
More than any of us. Bill Siebel from Atlanta. How you doing, Bill?
First of all, it's Seibold, and second of all, it was a third of a podcast, I think that still counts, right?
Sounds like you're really good friends, Dave.
Siebel, you know what?
I only listen when Clay's on, so.
Which lately has been like every other episode. You'll answer to what I call you, and you'll like it. So Bill is the host of the Cinemartyrs podcast. Bill, what exactly is the Cinemartyrs podcast? Because that's like, whenever I told Mikey about this, the first thing he said was, that's a cool name for a podcast.
So Jeremy Stevens and a good friend of mine and I came up with this. It's a very specific genre podcast. There's a lot of podcasts that are out there that kind of make fun of bad movies, but we specifically hone in on bad Christian movies. We watch a movie, we'll come back and kind of make fun of it a bit, but we also kind of like to find kind of the redemptive qualities of it and kind of explore a little bit about what the filmmaker had intended to do with it. 9 times out of 10, though, we have a good laugh over how bad the movie is.
You guys, 12 or 13 episodes in, are there any movies you guys have watched that when you watched it, you're like, this movie's not that bad? I mean, it's terrible, but it's not that terrible.
You know, actually, there was a movie recently we watched that's on Netflix. It's called Cracker Jack. It was a movie that was produced by Jeff Foxworthy, and the director and writer is actually here in Atlanta, and it turned out to be a very kind of, we looked at it, we thought, oh, this is just going to be just horrible. This is just going to be a goof. Yeah. And it actually turned out to be more of a, not so much of a comedy, but more of a bit of a farce about a guy that is part of a softball league that ends up into a church softball league. And it has some funny messages around men's ministry and kind of those kinds of things, but it has a nice message at the end. And I actually, it was kind of neat. I reached out to the guy that wrote, directed the film, and we're actually going to have him on an episode later on down the line, just to talk about Christian movies in general, because he's done a really good talk about the state of Christian movies and how, you know, even drawing parallels between Christians in films as well as African Americans as well as gays in films, and why the folks who are Christians are kind of just stuck in their area, whereas as other folks within other specific folks like gays as well as African Americans have moved beyond and actually are represented very well in the movies that are out there. Yeah, so it's definitely been an interesting foray into all this and learning more about the genre as well as how bad it can be.
That sounds like much more social importance than our podcast will ever be. So.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I just want pansexuals to be represented.
Michael. What? We don't even know what he's talking about.
What?
It's a thing.
So anyway, moving on.
Settle down.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. So, I mean, Christian Mingle is probably my favorite. I'm afraid to watch that movie again because I'm afraid I actually will like it for how bad it is because it's terrible but awesome. Yeah. So, because you can't go wrong with
You can't go wrong. First of all, you can't go wrong with Steve Tobolowsky. And, oh. And the fact that he has a maritime-themed advertising agency, that you can't even identify the town that they're in. It's just like you want it to be New York, but it really is in New York. And the fact that Corbin Bernstein directed and wrote the whole thing.
Oh,
that's so crazy.
Not to dive in too much on Christian Mingle, but I have to say my favorite part about that entire movie is – at the end of it, you have the black lady talking to the girl, and she's like, I knew about it the whole time. I knew about Jesus the whole time. I was just waiting for you to find out. And it's like, so you know Jesus, and you know this girl is searching. You know she's struggling, but you're just going to sit there quiet, not say anything about – that's not how this works. And so, you know, it's atrociously bad, but I
– atrocious.
I mean, I feel like I should watch it again because I want to like it. I don't know. Maybe it's just a late Schubert thing. So anyway, on that note, let's go to birthday movies. The movies that came out 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. 2011, Pinky's favorite, Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1 came out in October of 2011. And, of course, the remake of The Thing, which Mikey, I'm sure, is excited about watching.
No.
2006 in November, I keep saying November, October 2006, The Departed, The Prestige, The Marine, and, of course, the Oscar-winning Dane Cook movie, Employee of the Month, came out. Wow. Celebrating 15 years now, Training Day and On the Line, starring Lance Bass, which is just as bad as you think it might be. 1996, 20 years ago this month, Sleepers, which was not a date movie at all. I found that out. And That Thing You Do came out with Tom Hanks. In 1991, The Man in the Moon, Ernest Scared Stupid, and Cool as Ice all came out
nice.
This month.
Nice, Ernest Scared Stupid.
30 years ago, The Color of Money with Tom Cruise and Peggy Sue Got Married. 35 years ago, 1981, Halloween 2, just terrible. And, of course, American classic Enter the Ninja. And in 1971, 45 years ago, The French Connection with Gene Hackman made its debut. And so those are your birthday movies. So you know what came out. What's celebrating a birthday? So we're going to play a little game. We're going to call this game called the Reverse IMDb. And we used to play a game called IMDb, but we're doing reverse now. I guess it's called BDMI. We are going to take a movie.
BDMI.
A genre of movies. We'll take a movie, and we're going to go to IMDb. And I'm going to start at the bottom of the cast list, because they show 15 names on the front page of that movie. Start at the bottom of that 15 and read all the way up. It's all mixed up. Sometimes the stars are at the top. Sometimes they're in the middle. Who knows? But the genre this time is sports flicks.
Sports.
Okay? Sports flicks.
Sports flicks.
Sports flicks. You get sports it right, flicks. You get a point.
I'm an expert at all of this.
You should be. I think
by sports flicks, I mean that they're – and all you got to – it's pretty much Kevin Costner, right?
Yes.
Well, there goes that game.
Yeah,
if we're talking about baseball.
That's the reason why you went with the bottom of the cast, because if you said Kevin Costner, there'd be at least like 10 films that we would have to draw from.
But that's the trick. Sometimes in these movies, the stars are in the middle of this list. So it's not even like, you know, worst to first that I'm reading. And the little
like
trick
first
though,
appear.
You get a point for everyone you get right. If you get one wrong, if you call out whatever you want to, if you get one wrong, you have to wait five names before you can answer
five
again.
Five names, okay?
So you throw it out there, then you have to wait till five more are announced before you can say anything else.
Yikes.
Third baseman, number five.
So here we go.
Third.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. Starting at the bottom of this 15 on this page, Zachary Littlejohn.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Jordan Harris. Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, wait a minute. We know Chadwick Boseman.
We know Chadwick Boseman. Aaron Goldhammer. Anthony Rizzo.
I know this.
Jennifer Garner.
Oh, I can't remember
Jennifer
the name
Garner.
Of it.
Mike Maylock.
I can't remember the name of it.
Deion Sanders.
Draft Day.
It is Draft Day. Pinky with the point.
Wow.
Pinky with
Garner
the point.
Was at the lower side of the...
Jennifer Garner was in that?
She was
yes,
in that.
She
yes,
was.
She was.
She was the main co-star.
She was the love interest.
Yep. To Kevin Costner.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really?
All right. So
Did Deion play Deion?
Deion played Deion.
Yeah.
And he actually, Chris
Did
Berman,
he play anybody else?
I don't think so. I think it was Deion.
He played himself, yeah.
Yeah, and Chris Berman was actually at the top of that list. So that's the last
Chris
name I
Chris Berman was at the top of the list?
Kevin Costner was two names up I was about to call out in just a minute.
So yeah, Jennifer Garner, if I recall, she was the owner's daughter. Is that right?
Yeah.
The team owner's daughter.
Love interest. So, no, Kevin Costner was the owner's son, and Jennifer Garner happened to work there, and they were just together.
Right. Gotcha.
She was the concession stand lady.
Exactly. And Costner was the GM who was making the decisive pick.
Yes, that's right. I like Drafting.
That's an okay movie, actually.
The more I like it, the more I watch it. It's not good, but the more I watch it, the more
it's
I like
not good. It can't be good, but the more I watch
it's
it.
It's better than
Why can't it be good? I mean,
that was Costner. All right, here we go. This one. Starting at the bottom, Neil Gant. Mm.
No, what's the thing?
It's all sports.
It's all sports.
Oh, they're all sports. Yeah. Okay.
Neil Gant.
I didn't know if we were switching.
Burgess Jenkins. Ryan Gosling.
Oh.
Earl Poitier.
Oh.
Kate Bosworth.
Oh.
Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans is right.
I think he's really good at this.
Gosling was in Remember the Titans?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, man.
Very nice.
I'm not going to do good at this.
I'm not either because I can't remember titles.
All right, hold on. Wait for it.
I can't type fast enough on IBM.
All right, here we go.
We got to cheat.
Well, that's because you have to go to the advanced search and co-starred in. It's
well,
tough.
If you pay, if you subscribe, and I'm trying to subscribe right now to the premium edition, and they won't let me.
You have to have a SAG card to be in the premium edition.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
It's Christian Films. It gets you blocked every time.
Can Pinky blank, run a blank on everybody? Here we go.
If you know somebody at Pinewood there in Atlanta, maybe you can get in.
All right, next film, Melody Weintraub. It's at the bottom of the list.
Hmm.
Brian Holland, Libby Whitmore, Tom Nowicki, Andy Stahl, Catherine Dyer, Kathy Bates, Adrian Lennox,
Kathy Bates,
Kim Dickens,
Waterboy.
Nope. Lily Collins.
Oh. I'm out for five.
Jai Head, Quentin Aaron, Tim McGraw.
Oh.
And Sandra Bullock.
Friday Night
Very
Lights.
Good.
Oh.
Pinky got it. That's three for Pinky.
That is a good movie.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Can we just say Pinky wins?
No. Well, he's almost there.
I'm fine with that.
All right, here we go. Next one. James Harrell, Brady Coleman, Mark Walters, Joe Pickler, Jill Parker Jones, Thomas Duffy, and Eli Swinton. Amy Smart.
Oh.
Tiffany Love. Richard Leinbeck. Scott Kahn.
I'm so good at this game.
The late, great Ron Lester.
I'm just so bad
Scott
at this
Kahn.
Paul Walker.
James Kahn's son, probably.
John
Walker. See, I don't know the name of
and
any of these.
And my man, James Vanderbeek.
Vanderbeek. The football one. Somebody answer that.
Varsity Blues.
Yeah.
Varsity Blues.
Pinky's our winner. Domination. Yeah.
I don't see a lot of sports movies, I don't think.
I just don't remember.
I know the names
are.
This is not my genre.
So Pinky's really good at this game, so we're not going to play this game anymore.
Let's stop it.
He just took all the Kevin Costner movies out.
Yeah, he did that on purpose.
I said that.
No, Draft Day.
Well, Draft Day was on there, and I only had one on there. I had a whole list of them. I was excited, but Pinky dominated too much. So let's do our top five favorite religious films. Now, this is when you say religion, of course, you might think, well, just church going, Christian faith, whatever. This is anything having to do with any kind of religion, cults, any movie that is wrapped around some sort of belief system where it actually plays a central part of the movie itself, be it good or bad. So if Bill said, you know what, Dragnet with Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd because of the whole culty thing in the middle, we would go with it, So it's his picks. I don't know if Dragnet's on your list there, but
I don't even remember a cult in Dragnet. Was there?
Yeah, there was.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
The goatskin pants.
Yeah, the big plus.
Part of the rap song that Tom Hanks sang.
Yep. Exactly. I used to know that song, entire song by heart, and I still have it on iTunes somewhere. So Dr. Earl, why don't you kick off your number five? Religious film.
Well, and you may want to let Bill know that I sit in the pretentious corner. So
yes,
a lot of times I pull a lot of
pretentious, and so he may mention Terrence Malick more than once.
No. Well, no.
just once.
So, and I actually brought my movies with me, so you don't get to see the show and tell. But I'm going to flash some things up to you because I don't know if many of you guys
family show.
It's a theater of imagination.
Yeah, that's right.
Imagine theater. This. Yeah. So my number five, I have sort of a, and I'll be let me preface this by saying that this is kind of one of my things is like I enjoy
you love the religious films
I love the religious films but I love movies about Jesus Christ and so I picked one that was a little bit more obscure. Most people don't know about this one, and this is one called The Gospel According to St. Matthew. 1967. Now this is actually an Italian movie. that was made by a guy named Pierre Postlewaite.
Peter Postlewaite.
No.
Pretension is flowing out of your mouth right now.
This is very pretentious. I'm sorry, Pier Paolo Pasolini, and he's a he was a Marxist homosexual, but he got stuck. hold on, guys.
There's your episode title right there.
Yeah. So he got stuck in he got stuck in this hotel, and all he had was a Gideon Bible, and he started reading the Book of Matthew. And he said, wait a minute, this would make a great movie. This guy's like a revolutionary. He thought, he thought Jesus was like a Marxist or something. But anyway, so this is a really unique story, or unique version of it, because it's told kind of cinema verite, where it's like, it's kind of like the camera's tracking along behind. And he has a really interesting guy for Jesus. He's this like art student he found somewhere in Italy. The only problem is that this movie is like dubbed, and it's not great. So I'm hoping one day somebody
expect us to watch. That.
No. Okay. I'm not handling this.
I didn't know
out.
Why you brought him.
Trust me, you guys. No, you couldn't take this. You couldn't handle this.
No, but, you're right. I couldn't.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
But anyway, it won a special jury prize in Venice back in '64. It's really a well done version. It kind of makes you look at the whole gospel thing from a different angle. It's a good angle, not a bad angle. But anyway.
I need to wear a beret. If
you might need to, start smoking and wear a beret and a turtleneck. And no, I'm just kidding.
And get your.
This
your,
is a very interesting movie.
So
but anyway,
Earl's the only person that probably owns a copy of that.
I'm probably the only guy in the world.
This is actually the only copy that exists.
Okay, I was wondering.
He actually got this.
I had to smuggle it in from Enrique Azurekwa. Yeah,
and I have it on beta because that's the only appropriate medium to launch on.
Enrique Azurekwa.
Believe it or not,
isn't that the guy that sang?
You're on some Interpol watch list for buying that movie.
Probably so.
That was on the Amber Alert. Look for the guy who owns it. Weird.
So it's really good. Roger Ebert said Pasolini's is one of the most effective films on a religious theme I have ever seen.
Wow.
So it's got high critical praise on it.
That's high praise.
Man. Nick Cage might even like it. All right, David, to you.
Well, we'll send it to Bill. Bill, what's your number five?
Yeah, let's go to Bill.
Number five, I came in with The Apostle. With Robert Duvall.
Nice.
For those of you who haven't seen it, he plays this Pentecostal preacher, and it turns out that his wife is having an affair with their youth pastor at the church, and he confronts him about it very publicly, takes a bat to him, and sends him to the hospital, and has to just basically bolt, and he leaves, and he wrestles with God about this, wrestles about his passion about what God's called him to do, as well as what he has done, and he kind of starts up a church out of nowhere, and it is a film that just showcased how great Robert Duvall is as an actor. And phenomenal film, and it's definitely worth a watch. It's just a very well done film.
I think he got an Oscar nomination for that movie. I don't know for sure, but I think that he did. So.
Probably.
Pinky, have you ever heard of that movie, The Apostle?
I've heard of it. I couldn't tell you anything about it, but yeah, it definitely sounds interesting and worth a watch.
I feel like I need to see
just
that.
If you YouTube anything on it, check out just the scene where he's just praying to God about it, the whole thing,
and if there's a
present day example of wrestling with God about where you're calling me to do something, that is you'll see that, you'll be like, yeah, I see that. Yes.
Cool.
Nice.
Very nice.
So my number five is a little different of a turn than the Italian whatever St. Matthew of Assisi, Italy. Not knocking that film at all. I'm sure it's a wonderful film, just not my bag. Probably not as serious as David. The Apostle. 2010, Denzel Washington in The Book of Eli with Gary Oldman, Mila Kunis in a great role, by the way. She's great in this. Jennifer Beals, Ray Stevenson. Of course, he's a drifter who is looking for the west coast of the former United States, and he's very adept at fighting and hunting and survival skills, and he comes across a group of bandits who want to steal from him what he alone possesses, and that is a copy of the Bible.
And in this,
the books are very, very scarce in this, so having a book and being able to read is a pretty big deal in this. Critics hated this movie. It was like 48% on critics, but I like this movie a lot. This actually, I played with putting this in my top 100. I really, really like this movie quite a bit. I mean, it's not the best movie you've ever seen, but I think it's well done. I think Denzel is great in this. I think the story is obviously a little fantastical because it's very post-apocalyptic, mm-hmm. very neo-Western kind of movie. But I loved it. I think Gary Oldman plays a great bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's really good in this as well. And I forget his character's name, but he's Carnegie. That's his name. Everybody's good in this, and I really liked it a lot. So
yeah, and I think that's one of those films the critics hated, but the audience like really loves. Yeah. I think it was like 70-something audience-wise. I would have to double-check
and,
that.
And I mean, and Denzel, from what I understand, is a Christ follower. So, I mean, like, I think he really got into this role for what it was, and so I loved it. Mikey, number five for you.
All right. Well, my number five came out in 86, I believe. Yeah, close to that.
Transformers, the movie?
No, directed by Roland Joffé. And he's an iconic director. The Mission is my number five.
Yes.
De Niro.
Yeah, De Niro. It also had Jeremy Irons. You'll recognize, you probably don't know the name, but Ray McAnally.
You need to see this.
Yeah,
if you've never seen
it is such a phenomenal movie. It's basically 18th century Spanish Jesuits try to protect a remote South American Indian tribe in danger of falling under the rule of pro-slavery Portugal. Some of the best acting performances that you will ever see on film are in The Mission.
Liam Neeson's in this too.
Liam Neeson.
It is phenomenally shot. Joffé is a guy that... He also directed The Killing Fields. Mm-hmm. He is such a good director when it comes to these like huge scoping shots of things. I mean,
And he won this movie, won cinematography. It was nominated for 7 Oscars, won cinematography.
Right. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous film. The acting is phenomenal. You've got to see The Mission if you haven't seen it before.
Never heard of it, actually.
Yeah.
Really? You've never heard of it?
I've never heard of it.
Oh, Dave, man. I'll let you borrow a copy.
We've got it around.
Talk
so.
And pass it around.
That must have been on Earl's list. Yeah. So
it is on my list. That's why I brought it. So I think Pinky needs. I have Pinky in my sights to see
Pinky
this.
Yeah, Pinky needs to see it.
Okay.
Have you seen that, Bill?
I have not seen it, but I knew of it as it came out. But it was the kind of thing that it was. I guess a bit heady for me at the time.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, you can't go wrong with De Niro. You can't go wrong with the cast, and you can't go wrong with someone that you know before that did The Killing Fields. So
Very
Pinky,
nice.
What you got?
I'm going a completely different direction from all of you. And my number
Zoroastrian films. No,
my number five is actually a documentary called "Going Clear: Scientology in the Prison of Belief." And what it was, I believe HBO made this documentary. So if you have HBO, you can look it up on there. And what it is this documentary crew just diving into Scientology.
Wow.
And all the lies that it gives to its followers and whatnot, and it really just kind of follows it like from like how do they get people into this. And, like, how do people get out? So it follows, like, everybody. Obviously, the church, or quote-unquote church, didn't comment at all on this. But it talked about, of course, Scientology's heroes and Travolta and Tom Cruise. Although, and it's my understanding, Tom Cruise has kind of stepped back a bit from Scientology. But
don't believe that lie. Don't believe that lie.
That's what it's... anyway, just a really, really interesting documentary about this religion and just everything that kind of goes on. And just the more like you hear about it, it's like, man, how do people get sucked into this? But really, really well done. I thought it was a fantastic documentary.
Hmm. Well, and then on top of that, it not only does it talk about the religious aspect of it, but it also talks about the control that that David Miscavige has over the, if you were to say that the Scientology was the religion, that the Pope of that would be David Miscavige,
mm-hmm.
and he mm-hmm. runs that organization like just insanity behind him, and you have someone like Marty Rathbun, who is really kind of one of the biggest people that around Scientology, or who is an ex Scientologist, who went from being leaving the church because he was like probably one of the most powerful guys in the organization, to then being one of the people that's like the leading detractors, to then on to, let's just kind of move away from these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a copy of I watched the Louis Theroux's Scientology movie this week that's coming out on it. And it's interesting if you were to I've seen both, you know, this Going Clear as well as my Scientology movie. If you really want to see a really good Scientology movie, Going Clear is the one you got to see.
It is
by far probably the best documented, because it has not just not only Marty, but you have a number of other people who have left the church who come forth and say, you know, this is what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's a horrifying, horrifying look at especially the fact that this organization has tax-free status. I mean, that's the, mm-hmm. one of the biggest things is that they have free reign over that. And, it kind of makes your skin crawl watching the whole thing, but at the same time, it's great that to see there's so many people that are coming forward to say that, no, this is not right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really just chilling, like listening to some of the people that have left, like what lengths they went to keep them like under their control, like locking them up and stuff like that. Mm. It's just crazy.
Oh my gosh.
So I mean, just a brilliant, brilliant documentary.
Yeah, I love it. I love the documentary. I thought it was really, really good.
Going Clear, is that
going
the name
clear.
Of it?
Going
well,
Clear.
I mean,
going Clear,
yeah. And that's like one of those, Leah Remini is one of those actresses who has sort of kind of been like blacklisted because she left Scientology and she wrote like, she wrote a memoir or a
she
book
did.
Or something.
She did, and I watched it, and it's, I'm going to watch it.
You read
I read it. It was really good. It
yeah.
was really,
I mean,
really good.
Just about her experiences trying to leave that church and what they did to try
got,
and keep her.
I mean, she got harassed.
Yeah.
Plenty of times people were stalking her and calling her and threatening her and her family, and
gosh, terrible.
Yep.
Yep,
so,
Dr. Earl.
Number four. So my number four movie is maybe a movie you guys haven't heard about. Maybe
most
you have. I don't know. It's 2010's Of Gods and Men. And it's the story, true story of a group of Trappist monks who were in Algeria. And they are kind of like told by terrorists. There's like the civil war going on. And the terrorists are like, you guys got to leave. And they're like, well, no, we're going to serve our community that's here.
Huh.
And sort of how they kind of like have to work through that, and as they come under threat from the government and also the terrorists. So it's a really good story. I have a lot of martyrdom stories, so this is this is another one. But it's really well done. The biggest star in it is Lambert Wilson, who I guess he was in The Matrix 2. He's is one of the bad guys.
Oh yeah,
you'd know him if you see him. He's a that guy. But
right.
But anyway, it's really done. It's French. You have to use subtitles.
Oh,
sorry, guys.
Man.
So, but 2010
is
beautifully shot. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Michael. You can't see this one.
Yeah.
It has reading involved. But
is there an audible version of it?
Huh?
Is there an audible version of the subtitles?
Maybe so. I don't know. But it won a BAFTA. It won Grand Prix something. I don't know.
That's great.
Palme d'Or. So anyway.
It won the Grand Prix. Yeah. So.
It won
not,
the Grand
not,
Prix.
Not the Grand Prix race, but the,
The movie goes fast.
Wait, Grand Prix in that cons?
In the it's cons. Yeah. They won a cons. Anyway,
wow.
In the face of terror, the greatest weapon was faith.
It's the second most prestigious award after the Palme d'Or.
The pretentious corner has spoken.
So I would need to put a beret on top of my beret.
Yeah, it's like a double beret.
This wins double. This has two berets.
It's like double cravat.
Right. So,
need to watch. Have an espresso in hand.
We've moved from Italy to France. We haven't gotten very far yet, guys.
Make sure you bust out that ascot. You know.
Yes.
Smoke a pipe while you watch it as well.
All right, Bill. You're number four.
Well, I'm going to go in the similar direction and kind of along those lines, yes. I don't think it was at Cannes, but the Blues Brothers.
Yeah. That's great.
Because
it is great.
You think about this, you have one ex-con who takes his brother to see Sister Mary
That's
Stigmata,
right.
who says that you have to rescue this orphanage. And that's the line that goes throughout the movie is that we are on a mission from God.
Mission from God.
And so, you have Jake who sees the light when James Brown is performing the old landmark at the Triple Rock Baptist Church. It is certainly a crazy, insane movie. If you have not seen The Blues Brothers, this is probably, I guess, the very first Saturday Night Live inspired movie.
Yes,
right.
I think it was first breakout movie.
It is just a classic. Just the fact of John Candy sitting on top of the semi and saying, "Hey, we're in a truck." Still freaks me out to this day.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, it's probably the most epic car crash movie ever, and it also is God inspired.
Well, I mean, if we didn't have the Blues Brothers, we wouldn't have It's Pat the movie. So I'm really thankful.
Oh, David,
he set the precedence for Saturday Night Live movies coming up.
Yeah, and, thanks,
you
know, Dave.
You have James Brown as a preacher in there. Yeah. I mean, he's great.
You have a later on. You have Hansen doing shot for shot remake of the part where Ray Charles is playing with the Blues Brothers.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Later on, you do.
They filmed it in Tulsa, and they even brought in Weird Al Yankovic, who's like a big friend of theirs, who's like doing a scene that you watch compare the original with Ray Charles and Hanson, and they've matched it. It's a beautiful, awesome. Homage to the Blues Brothers. So there, David.
That is a great movie. And Pinky, just so you'll know, Saturday Night Live is a TV show that started in the 70s.
Hanson was a group that was really big in the 90s. They're really good now. They do a lot of touring.
You listen to Hanson. They have done their transformation from pop to what they're doing now is phenomenal.
And they have a really good beer called Hops.
Yeah.
I'm serious. No, I'm serious. They have it. Hops. Look it up.
Hops? No, they don't.
Yes. Yeah. I promise you, it's Hops.
He's not kidding.
I am not.
I mean,
kidding.
What else would you call it?
I know people in Oklahoma. I will find this out.
Hops.
I
mean, yeah.
Hanson Ale doesn't have the same ring.
No. You got to go Hops. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hops.
Love it. All right. So my number four.
David.
It's from 1985. It's a crime thriller drama directed by Peter Weir with Harrison Ford and Kelly McGillis that takes place with the Amish, and that is Witness.
Oh, nice.
A community. Very nice.
One of my 40 favorite films of all time. I love this movie, and it's probably, I mean, outside of Star Wars, this is my favorite Harrison Ford film. You know, a little Amish boy sees witnesses a murder in the bathroom, and so he escapes back with his parents with his mom back to the Amish country, while Harrison Ford, playing John Book, is put into the Amish civilization to kind of guard the family, but also kind of figure out the mystery of who killed the guy and whatever. You know, it is really a great clash of societies. There's one scene in particular that I remember is when they're all sitting there in the carriages, and they get stopped by the guys in the trucks, and the guys in the trucks are throwing, you know, Cokes in the Amish faces, and they're making fun of them, hitting hats, whatever. And Harrison Ford or John Book starts to get out, and the old guy goes, "No, this is not our way. It's my way." And he gets up, beats the crap out of the guy, you know. So, I mean, I love this movie. I love every second of this. They even managed to make Kelly McGillis attractive, which is nice.
Oh,
and so,
boo.
Everybody boo Dave.
Boo.
Oh, come on now. So anyway, no, it's good. It's a great film. Great film. So.
Well, that's the first time you get to see a barn raising. I mean, how often do you get to see a barn raising?
Well, no, you're wrong there. Brides for Seven Brothers.
That's true.
You see a barn raising.
I stand corrected.
And there's a lot of dancing.
Yeah.
You don't have
come on. A musical barn raising versus a Harrison Ford barn raising he wants to see.
Yeah.
But he's a real carpenter, too.
But the
so,
thing is,
on.
Witness doesn't have
there you go.
Near as much dancing as Seven Brides for Seven.
That's true.
That's the one thing that is missing. Amish,
I was just referring to the barn raising part of it. I know my barn raisings. I mean, come on.
Really, Michael? What?
Mikey's a barn raising apologist.
That's right. Barn raising on film, I know. All right, my number
There's
4.
There's a Simpson line in there somewhere, and I can't remember what it was, but
very much so.
My number 4 is from 2008, very critically acclaimed Doubt, starring...
Oh, I want to see this.
Yeah.
Oh.
I've never seen it. It's an Amy Adams movie.
Meryl Streep, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Amy Adams.
Man, that's good.
So
movie.
Good. This is a really odd fact about this movie. The director, John Patrick Shanley, the only other film that he has directed is Joe versus the Volcano.
Really?
That's some range.
Strange. He's you know, had a career for quite a while, obviously, in Hollywood, but more of a screenwriter. Because he wrote the screenplay for this as well. But the only other film he directed was Joe versus the Volcano.
Wow.
But
essentially,
you've got Philip Seymour Hoffman is a priest, and a Catholic school principal played by Meryl Streep sort of questions his ambiguous relationship with one of the students. And so it turns into sort of also like a mystery where she's trying to uncover what's going on at this Catholic school. I think it's set in New York in the 60s or something like that. It is outstanding. Amy Adams plays, you know, a priest who thinks, or I'm sorry, a nun who thinks priests can do no wrong. And so she's sort of like, I can't believe this would be, you know, but they end up teaming up. It's such a very good very good movie. I highly recommend it. I mean, all three actors got nominated for an Academy Award. Best actor, best actor, best supporting. I think all three of them were nominated. So very, very well done. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's one I've been meaning to see for sure. Let's see. My number four is going to be Carrie from 1973-ish.
I really want to hear where this goes.
The original.
Yeah.
Anyway, get some range in here. Of course, this isn't a highly religious film, but religion does play a big part in this, with Carrie's mom being just like absolutely crazy, over-religious, like locking her in her closet type, just like crazy. And that, of course, that plays a factor on Carrie's psyche, and of course that's why she's an outcast at school, which leads to other things. But I love this movie. It's one of my favorite high school movies, so I just like to throw it in wherever I can, so it was appropriate.
My favorite high school movies: Fast Times, Goonies, Breakfast Club, Carrie.
Hey, that's legit.
And I've mentioned this before, Nancy Allen plays Chris Hargensen, one of the best villains ever put on film, as how evil this girl, and she's just naturally evil, not superpowers or supernatural, just evil.
And no, John Travolta too, right?
Him too.
Early role.
But she's the one that kind of sucks him in and basically makes it, kind of manipulates him to do it. I mean, he only does it because he wants her. And of course William Catt in this movie as well. I can't forget William.
Ah, greatest American hero.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Earl. Okay. What film from Ghana do you have for
Well,
Ghana.
We're not moving much faster out of the pretentious corner. I'll be honest with you. So you guys don't understand. You've really tapped into something with me, because this is where I've searched the world. So,
Dr. Earl, I've got to bring you into the Cinemartyrs world so we can watch some just like really bad stuff, as opposed to all the stuff that you've like ingested so far.
My soul may just like crinkle up and just die in the midst.
As your leader. As one of the three of us are your
I've
leader here on
I've seen some cheesy
podcast,
Christian movies.
We give you permission to go on their podcast.
I'll be glad to say. So this next one is one that you guys probably have never seen again. But this is one that actually, Pinky, you may end up seeing in your movie history class at some point. And that is the Passion of Joan of Arc.
Yeah,
from 1928. Yeah. So, yeah. Well done. Well, this movie actually goes through the actual literal.
I like Mila Jovovich's Joan of Arc better.
No, you're just
kidding. You haven't even seen it.
But anyway, this movie goes through the literal document, I guess, of the court trial of Joan of Arc, which is kind of interesting. Apparently, the only full copy of this movie they found just in this broom closet in a psychiatric place in 1980s or something, or 90s. It's crazy how recently they found this movie. But anyway, very good, very well done. Surprisingly, I'm always surprised at 1920s movies that are well done, but this has I think there's a literal bloodletting in this movie. They're puncturing this person's arm, and I'm going, I'm pretty sure that's an actual vein of blood shooting out. So I was real surprised at how kind of graphic this is, but also how well done and how kind of inspiring it is. The guys are just totally laughing at me here. But
I was thinking about something.
Was thinking that I prefer Jane Wiedlin's version of Joan of Arc in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. No, I think she's
pretty good
really
too.
Brought that to the forefront of cinematic
and when
prowess.
You said bloodletting, I totally there's an SNL classic SNL skit.
I know what you're talking about.
It's just amazing.
Theodric of York.
Yeah, Theodric of York.
I'll defend you on that one, Earl. The bits and pieces I've seen, considering it was made in the 20s. Daggum.
It's kind of intense. Yeah. Like the movie's going along, and all of a sudden they just show this lady breastfeeding. It's just this one shot, and I'm like, what is this game? It's kind of Games of Thrones ish. It's kind of strange, but it's very well done, and it's considered one of the great movies. And it's a great faith movie. Now we go to Bill.
Bill, yeah.
So I'm gonna go way. I'm not as far as back as the 1920s, but I'm gonna go back to 1800s. Certainly a movie that played a significant role in my. My faith growing up, which is Oh God, which stars George Burns and John Denver.
Yeah.
And the premise is that God just kind of shows up and begins to hang out with just some ordinary guy that works at a grocery store. And just what would that be like if they certainly kind of did that with the Jim Carrey flick.
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty. Bruce. Yeah. But this is kind of more of what would be like if God actually came down and started talking to one of us. Mm-hmm. And it really unfolds very, very well. There's even a moment where there are all these religious leaders that kind of circle around John Denver's character and say, okay, if God is truly speaking to you, then here, answer all of these questions. And they're written in Aramaic, I think. And so, you know, God is played by George Burns, is telling him how to answer all these questions. Along the way, even John Denver's like, you know, you need to write this out. You do this. And he ends up writing the question in John Denver's handwriting. It's just kind of like a nice touch to all of that. One of the wonderful moments of this whole thing is that Paul Sorvino plays the Reverend Willie Williams, who is like this televangelist. And in the midst of like this huge altar call, John Denver shows up in all of this and says, you know, God's been talking to me and God tells me that you should stop what you're doing and go back to selling shoes and in front of all of his congregation. And it's just like this wonderful moment. And then all of a sudden, Willie Williams sues John Denver for all of this. And it's just it's a great, great, great old film.
It's a good movie.
George Burns. I think it kind of brought George Burns back into the limelight. I mean, you saw him on Carson at those times, just kind of sitting there smoking a cigar. But it led to other sequels and such. But really, you know, and just this movie alone is just a wonderful, wonderful delight. It was done, I think, in 79. It was Carl Reiner did it.
77. Yep.
And oh, was Carl Reiner, really?
It was the kind of thing where it's like I mean I sat there when I was because this was like the age of when VCR tapes were really expensive to buy, so you couldn't really just run down to a Blockbuster and throw down $5 and get a previously watched video cassette. This was like if you bought a VCR tape, this was wow, that's a lot. And we actually had this. And I watched it, and I watched it, and I watched it, and we were like sitting in confirmation class, and I'm like asking all of these questions from the movie to my pastor, and he's like, oh.
God doesn't really quite work like that.
But I still, I mean, that was
he's
really
not George Burns.
It was like my first time where I was really kind of trying to wrap my head around what God really was like and not to say that God is like a person only in the sense of Jesus, but it's just like, you know, how could he do this? And why is it like this? And I love that movie. That had a huge impact on me, and it's a great, great film.
I have never seen these movies. I've heard about them, but I've never seen them. Followed up with a sequel in 1980 by Oh God, Book Two, and then of course 1984
Oh God, You Devil.
With Oh God, You Devil, exactly. Yeah, yeah. My favorite though is here the tagline for Oh God, Book Two, and the Lord said, "Let there be another movie," and lo and behold, there was another movie. So.
The first movie was good, and I think you must be close to my age, Bill, because I think that came out when I was kind of in that same age of like searching to find out, you know, information. I don't mean to say you're young or old. I'm just saying that I remember those movies being on like the ABC, you know, Sunday night movie or something like that, and being really amazed by it. But I'm sure I missed probably a lot of the jokes went over my head, I'm afraid.
But I mean, up to that point, it was like we never really saw. I mean, that was the beauty of think about, you know, Jesus, and that Jesus came to earth and he's like, okay, he's one of us, and right, we can relate to him. And he's a person. And so in this movie, we get to see God in that fashion. I mean, we certainly see that in Bruce Almighty, too. And that's kind of cool to see. I mean, and everybody kind of jokes, oh, yeah, well, Morgan Freeman, that's just the obvious choice. But I mean, back in the day, too, it's like, well, George Burns, oh, yeah, that's the obvious choice. And it's
God smokes a cigar. This is
exactly. and he's warm, and he's caring, and he tells jokes, and that's the God I believe in. I mean, that's the God that enjoys being with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that is the precursor to Bruce Almighty, and And yes, yeah, it's certainly so. it's a dated movie in that you know it plays back to this late to 70s, but it is a great film. Mm-hmm.
Well, and if God is going to relate to Christian millennials nowadays, he would come down with a man bun. Drinking red wine or white wine smoking
skinny
cigar.
Jeans.
Yeah, and skinny jeans.
Well, I don't know if he wouldn't have a cigar, though. He'd have like
a vape. Yeah. Well, that or a pipe, and he'd be playing Worship, you know, with Chris Tomlin loud laser lights and things like that.
Would be rapping, though, wouldn't he? Would you not?
Oh, yeah, Lecrae.
Oh, he'd have Lecrae. Yeah.
We'd have Lecrae as guy.
Or it'd be a pop song with Lecrae with him. He'd be like Toby Mac pop song, but throw Lecrae in there. Yeah.
Maybe KJ52 is actually God.
No,
that's
he's
why
gone.
We haven't heard
no,
last
year.
Tomlin is—he's kind of on the outs, is he not? I mean, come on.
Tomlin is kind of. Yeah, he's on the fading.
He's
fading.
What about Crowder? Is he still in?
Crowder's still in.
He's holding on. He
grew
on.
A beard. He's
Crowder
still in.
Grew this like ridiculously long beard.
I met Crowder in a parking lot as he was leaving our worship or leaving our church. The dude has beautiful teeth.
Oh really?
Interesting. He's had some serious work done.
Oh yeah.
I'm very jealous. Yeah. I shouldn't be, but he's got.
So
he doesn't drink coffee anymore.
Yeah,
he must not.
He's hill folk, so he did.
Who's
have
Who's the
work
big
done.
Worship leader now? Like I don't know. I don't listen.
Who's
to
the big
worship? Yeah,
leader?
Who's the big one in now? I mean, Tomlin's on the outs.
Crowder.
Yeah, you know, Crowder.
Crowder's super popular.
It's about groups now.
It's
Hillsong.
Hillsong's huge now. They were huge in the 2000s, like early 2000s, late 90s, but they're even bigger now. Like they, but Hillsong has this thing where they rotate people in and out, and so it's just they are mad.
So everybody gets their turn. They have a bench of worship leaders. All right, man, you're up. It's your time.
Man.
Come on up.
It's not. It's not personality. It's not a person anymore. It seems to be more like a worship group producing songs. Anyway, that's another podcast for another time.
Yeah, that's another podcast for another time. Yeah.
David,
which I feel great going from Tomlin and everything to my next movie. Because I love this movie, and that is This Is the End. With Jonah Hill, James Franco, Seth Rogen, Jay Baruchel, Danny McBride, Craig. I love the fact they all play themselves. Emma Watson has a fantastic cameo in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, Christopher Mintz-Plasse is in this, Paul Rudd, Channing Tatum. I like this whole Channing Tatum also has a fantastic cameo with Danny McBride. They all play themselves. Of course, the apocalypse happens. While they're at a party and everything goes crazy, and they all, you know, several of them, Franco and Jonah Hill, Seth Rogen, Jay Baruchel, and Craig Robinson all get stuck in the house together. Danny McBride shows up later. It's hilarious. Now, obviously, the version of heaven is not necessarily the version that I believe in, but you know, they if you do good things, you go to heaven. If you don't, you don't, as evidenced by James Franco's ending towards the end of the movie. Very vulgar, lots of language. Not at all biblically sound at all. Jay Baruchel's character, Jay, playing himself, he actually is the only one that brings up, hey, this is the apocalypse. He pulls out the Bible, and he's reading verses probably out of context, obviously, out of Revelations about what's happening. But I think it's a great movie. I love that movie. I think it's awesome. You know, Jonah Hill laying in bed there, God, it's me. You know, from Moneyball, I was Oscar nominated. I mean, just you know,
did you say that really?
He does. Yeah. He's like, it's from Moneyball. You know, Oscar nominated for an Oscar. And then Danny McBride sitting there insulting all of them, like what their careers are going. And he's just like, you know, you're an Oscar nominated actor, Jonah. What are you doing with yourself? Nothing.
Yeah.
It's so good. Love
it. It's
love
a lot
This
of fun.
Is the End. So, but that's not a movie I'm going to recommend to anybody. See it on your own accord.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, no, it's highly offensive. Let's see. My number three.
Passion of the Christ. Got it.
No, no. 1986's Jean-Jacques Annaud directed The Name of the Rose.
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie,
absolutely. I saw this when I was really young.
I really thought Jean-Jacques Annaud was the name of the movie. I'm like,
no,
what?
Jean-Jacques Annaud is the director.
That is a good movie.
And, yeah, it's essentially a mystery film, but it takes place in the 1300s, and Sean Connery plays this monk,
I'm a monk.
Who does not even try and have an accent. He's Sean Connery. he is Sean Connery as a monk in the 1300s. Just believe it. And his young cohort, Christian Slater. No, yeah. I mean he's one of the monks. But basically,
he's a church detective.
There's
sort of, or something.
There's a death in the abbey.
That's right.
And so
that's right.
All the monks are like, oh, this means the apocalypse is coming, and so they call upon Sean Connery to come and try and solve what's going on with all these murders. You know, the The great Helmut Qualtinger is also in this. I'm just kidding. I have no idea who that is. But he's in it. Helmut Qualtinger is in it. But IMDb...
He's my favorite.
IMDb's the worst because, you know, on their front page, at least if you're on their app, they list the top billed actors. It's got Sean Connery, Christian Slater, and Helmut Qualtinger.
Well, in Germany, he's big, I
guess. Yeah, exactly. No, he's an Austrian. You got to get that right. No, I mean, I love this. It's more just a straight mystery film, but it just happens to be set in and around this, you know, world of monks and the 1300s. And Sean Connery's actually really good in it. I mean, even though it's cheesy that he's a monk. And Christian Slater, really young Christian Slater, is very good. This is like Christian Slater, probably around the time that he was in
probably
that
Heathers, right?
Pump up the volume.
I think that was
with the skateboard one, Gleaming the Cube. This is sort of like Gleaming the Cube era.
Oh, good movie.
Yeah, exactly. So,
all right, so like a little side tangent. Are you guys watching Mr. Robot at all?
I am not, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, I've heard wonderful things about it.
If you want the resurgence of Christian Slater around this show is absolutely
amazing.
Didn't
he win an Emmy?
He won an Emmy.
Yeah. Wait, yeah. He's in the movie.
Either
in the
show. Globe or
I think it was the what's his name?
Rami Malek.
Rami Malek. Yeah.
But didn't
Slater won a Golden Globe for it. Yeah.
Every time I see Rami Malek though, he's the kid that's in Larry Crown with Tom
right,
Hanks and Julia
right,
Roberts.
Right.
So I can't get.
And
past
he was
that,
also
so.
In the museum movies too. He was in one of the museum movies. The
like Slater
Night at the Museum or
yeah, like one of the Night at the Museum.
That's right. He plays like Ja Raja or something like that.
Yeah.
I got you.
He's the son. Yeah, the son of the guy. Yeah,
that makes sense.
No, yeah. Slater did win a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor and a Supporting or Best Actor.
Ron Perlman's role. In that movie
yeah,
too.
I was gonna say, here's what I love about the cast
in the name
list
of the Rose.
F. Murray Abraham,
Urs Alfus, Valentina Vargas, Leopoldo Trieste, Franco Vellebra, Ron Perlman.
Oh, in the name of the Rose? Yeah, exactly. No, like Slater, I don't know. Slater I respect because he's one of those journeyman actors who's just been around forever and has continued to work. And his career has ebbs and flows, and he happens to be on a flow right now, which is fine. I like it. It's good.
I mean, he was in Legend of Billie Jean, which could be itself a religious film. But
what you got, Pinky?
My number three is a film that we've talked about a lot on this show, and that is Spotlight, the winner of the Oscar last year.
Yeah.
Of course, a very sensitive subject.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Yeah, the press conference. Or
it's also on my list. So.
Newspaper looking into the Catholic Church about molesting children and whatnot. Very, very powerful film, and it was very well handled. Like, they could have attacked the Catholic Church and whatnot, and they handled it very, very well, very mm-hmm. respectfully mm-hmm. For the church and the victims, and I thought they just did a brilliant job handling such a tough subject. So I'm actually really glad it won the Oscar last year.
Really
I thought it was a great, great film.
I loved Spotlight. I loved everything about it. I want to watch it again. I mean, the problem with doing this podcast, not that there's a problem with it, but doing this podcast, when I want to watch a movie again, I'm thinking, well, that takes up time when I could be watching a new movie that I haven't watched yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't seen The Big Short or Spotlight, either one, again, even though they're on Netflix, because I'm like, or Imitation Game just came on Netflix, too, because I'm like, well, I could watch this new one that I haven't seen yet, so we can talk about it on the show, and so I want to catch it again. But you're right. I mean, I love it, and we've said this before. One of the things I love about Spotlight is that it takes place – it goes after one subject only. There's no side trails. Mm-hmm. There's no interoffice romance. There's no, you know, personal stories about their families. It is just the story of the church and what's mm-hmm. happening with that horrific, you know, with the sexual assaults and everything. I love that about that movie.
Yes.
And everybody in that movie, Leif Schreiber and John Slattery and mm-hmm. Michael Keaton, everybody in that movie is fantastic.
Yeah, they're all incredible.
Yeah, that was
they're all
incredible
so
movie.
Good in this. Bill, have you seen Spotlight?
I have not seen it. I saw that it popped up in Netflix, and so it's like you said, Dave. It's one of those things. It's like I've got a list. I want to see it. I want to get in on I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Take 2 hours and watch it. But just know that it's not a happy film. It's not a obviously you know. But watch it by yourself when you have an afternoon or whatever. But it is really. I mean, you work from home. You got time. You know. So no, it's
all
really,
the time
really
in the
good.
World.
Are we to number two?
We're
where are
number
we at?
Two.
Number two. My number two flick is a flick that did win an Academy Award, like all my others. No, I'm just kidding. No, like a lot of mine. And that's 1981's Chariots of Fire.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, so Chariots of Fire.
I know that one.
You know this one. I know. Yeah, I finally pulled
heard of that one.
This one. So, Pinky, you need to see this sometime. So it's about two runners in the 1927 Olympics, I think, and one of them's Jewish, one of them's a Christian.
and just kind of the story of sort of their working through this this time. One of the guys is struggling with, you know, should he run on a Sunday or not as the Christian faith. And so it's really an interesting it's a good story. It's about actually a group of guys that are British that go to the games in France. But a classic. It's got the, of course, the classic song. There, David's going to play the classic song. But there's a lot of good stuff here about the just about faith and just about their journey. And so, anyway, Chariots of Fire, Pinky is another one you need to see. Yeah. So.
At some point. And you've also got the conflict of World War II.
That's right.
Impending World War II, and you got Hitler there, right? With the Jewish runner, right?
No. Well, they were in France. No, they...
Did I get that wrong?
No, they weren't quite to that point yet, because it was right after World War. It was kind of in between, sandwiched in between, and they're in France for the Olympics.
Okay.
But, it was more just about their trying to win, and you know, the Jewish guy is just all about winning to prove himself, and you know, that's like all he lives for, is like, I've got to prove myself, because there's racism toward him among some of the British guys, and so, but yeah, no, they haven't quite got to the Hitler stuff yet, although that comes later in the 30s, but anyway, Chariots of Fire is my number two. Thank you, David, for the overwhelming... loud music.
No, it sounds great.
No, it sounds good.
I feel like I should go run now, which is strange because I don't ever run.
Okay. So my... To Bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bill, yes. Friend Bill is going to do his number two now.
which is Saint Vincent, starring Bill Murray.
Oh, interesting.
The American treasure.
Okay. He is.
What's the religious slant on that, in your opinion?
Yeah, so if you're not sure about this, is that you have Melissa McCarthy and her son move next door to, and this is all set in Philadelphia, move next door to Vincent, who's played by Bill Murray, and he is just a horrible, horrible guy. It's probably the last person you would want to live next door. And one of my former coworkers always said, you know, you can't pick your neighbors. And so he is probably just the worst neighbor you could be next to. The challenge is that Maggie, who's Melissa McCarthy, she is working, you know, double shifts. And so she needs someone to take care of her son, Oliver. And so she enlists Bill Murray to just at least keep an eye out for him. And you, as you know, this set in Philadelphia, you can imagine Vincent takes her son to the track. He takes him to his local bar and all this kind of other stuff. But in the midst of all this, you have Oliver, this kid who is attending this Catholic school, which is pretty funny because you have Brother Garrity, who's played by Chris O'Dowd, who I could pretty much watch Chris O'Dowd read the phone book.
Yeah, he's
and
great.
Be delighted
yeah.
by.
Yeah, he's good.
And even what was great is that you have Oliver kind of shows up at this Catholic school, and he kind of timidly raises his hand and says, I'm not sure what I believe in. And Brother Garrity kind of points out, well, she's Jewish, she's agnostic, he's, you know, Presbyterian, you know, we're all at a Catholic school, who cares? But the whole thing is around this is having Oliver find this like the big group project around searching for saints among us, and as despicable as Vincent is, he has redeemable characteristics about him. He has a wife that is suffering from Alzheimer's, and so he is visiting her every week and doing her laundry and checking in on her. And he's doing all these things to help other people out. And even though he does it in a really, you know, weird way, Oliver sees that there's a lot of good in Vincent's heart. And toward the end of the movie, you see, you know, kind of Oliver showing that to the world. And it's one of those films that, I mean, it didn't necessarily receive a huge amount of praise by everybody, but it's on Netflix now, and it's a great, great Bill Murray film. If you like Bill Murray, you'll like this movie.
Oh, we like Bill Murray.
Yeah.
I've got that on my queue. I haven't seen that. Have you seen that, Michael?
I did see it. I thought that it was okay. I was I don't know. I thought maybe it was trying too hard to be one of those Lost in Translation or even Broken Flowers, like ne'er-do-well Bill Murray type of movies that we've seen lately. So I was just, I don't know. I thought that fell in there, but I thought it was still very well done. And, you know, Dave knows that I have such a problem with Melissa McCartney that anytime that she's in a film...
It's hard for you to get over that.
But,
I understand.
But you know what? This is the best that she's been, though, to me, where, like, legitimate acting, you know, most of the stuff she's just, like, you know, taking a crap in a sink and getting an Academy Award nomination. Which I will continually be bitter over. But
So two notes on that is one is that I think that even though that everybody wants to lift up Vincent in this, he's a great guy, he's so wonderful.
Yeah.
He still is a dirtbag.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
there's no doubt in that.
I mean, he's still, they have to cajole him toward the end to show up. To be recognized in this capacity.
Right. Yeah.
And from Melissa McCarthy's standpoint, I certainly understand where you're coming from. At the same time, she plays a backseat to a lot of this.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of good. It's like you don't have to take a crap in the sink in order to to be a frustrated mom.
Yeah, exactly.
In dealing with all of this stuff. And it's nice that dealing with her character being I'm overwhelmed. I need a father figure in my life.
Mm.
Oh, gee, I guess this guy next door can do it.
It's a toned down Melissa McCarthy.
It's definitely a toned down version of even the some of the other films that he's done.
Sure.
And so I certainly see what you're saying about that. Those other Bill Murray films that he's done. So he's definitely not as heavy as Lost in Translation.
No, certainly not.
I do want to see that though, Bill.
Yeah, no, I would definitely.
I've put it on my list because I really like. I'm a Murray completist.
I mean, see that over Rock the Casbah if you're trying to see current Murray.
Right.
See Saint Vincent. Yeah.
My number two, Spotlight. Spotlight number two. So we talked about it already. So that's number two.
Okay.
My
number two, and I can't even remember the circumstances around how I even saw this film, but I bought it, I own it, and I really must love it because it's The Big Kahuna. It stars Kevin Spacey and Danny DeVito as these two veteran salesmen. They basically are trying to land the big kahuna. So they've set up, and it was a play originally, and you can certainly see that in the film translation because it's all really takes place in this one hospitality suite.
That's a great film.
And they've got this young guy from research and development that comes in to try and help them, played by Peter Facinelli, who we all know from Can't Hardly Wait, and that's about the only thing you might know him from.
Twilight movies.
He's in all the Twilight movies also.
He's now on the Superman. He's on the Supergirl TV show now, actually.
Oh, he is?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm
glad that he's still working. He's a good guy. So he plays this religious... character. He's got some strong religious beliefs, and he has some morality issues that come into play where he's questioning some of the tactics that these two veteran salesmen are using to try and land the big kahuna. So I think that if you're in a corporate workforce, I think you've dealt with this type of stuff I've dealt with it before. It just comes into play when you're in the corporate world. You know, having to make that decision, the moral decisions that you may want to make to just stand up for the fact that you're a Christian or you know, whatever your religious affiliation may be, somebody doing something a little on the immoral side to get something done or something. So I think at the time that I saw it, it was really, I had just started in the corporate world. And so I was feeling it more then than I'm a grizzled veteran now in the corporate world. So I'm
been
sort
there
of
a long time.
I'm sort of, I've been where I worked for 16 years. So I'm sort of jaded now, but
you're the Kevin Spacey.
I'm
character
the Kevin
now.
Spacey character now. Whereas
Pinky was seven when you started.
Yeah. So where I was at. Yeah. Pinky was seven where I started working where I am now. Yeah. So it was just crazy. But, I really, empathized with the Peter Facinelli character in this. Yeah. So
Mike Dexter,
if you can find it, I don't know how you would find the Big Kahuna. you might actually have to just like outright buy the thing or go to your local library. Libraries, we always forget to mention, the local library has a ton of movies.
Yeah,
you know, especially if you're in a bigger city. And it looks like you can rent it on Amazon for $2.99. So there, you have that VOD option as well. So
won a prize at Sundance Film Humanitas Prize. So
I don't know. It's great. I mean,
it's a very well acted.
The director has not done a thing since, and this is the only thing the guy's ever done. But I thought it was great. I mean, you know, it's. And Kevin Spacey's great in it too. I mean, he's always good at playing that absolutely insane business type guy. So
yes,
Kevin Spacey plays Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, exactly.
As usual.
Yeah.
Good.
My number two has got to be Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Interesting.
I see the religious connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's looking for the Ark of the Covenant, which holds the Ten Commandments.
Right,
so, I mean,
right.
That, and it's, like, impossible.
Look at Earl over there is exasperated.
It's impossible.
Kiki, there's Christian cinema for you, my friend. We can, I've got all these, we're going to start you on a regimen. First flywheel. Then, no, I'm just kidding.
Then the
you can't watch
screw
this,
tape letters. We're gonna have that
screw tape.
Anything by David A. O. White.
Yeah, right? That's right. A. O. White.
I would argue you cannot watch this movie without having some sort of spiritual experience. I mean, goodness gracious, this movie
that's
is awesome.
That's a bit of a stretch there, young Padawan.
No, but you do understand how big God is when this. At the end,
he
right?
Melts, oh, he melts sure. people's
it's,
faces.
It's
off.
About as big of a stretch as the Big Kahuna. I mean, it's you know
what?
No.
What?
You know?
Wow, Dave.
Now, anyway. Big Kahuna has some.
Yeah,
anyway, go ahead.
Big Kahuna is great, man.
Yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And
two.
Raiders of the Lost Ark does as well. Yeah, as it does.
Dr. Earl.
Oh, we're to me again.
Yes, we are.
Well, this has been a movie that you had previously mentioned, which was The Mission. It's my number one.
Yeah.
So when I was in 11th grade, I was on the high school newspaper, and me and this one guy were sent to see, we were like the movie critics for the high school newspaper. So we were sent to go see this movie called The Mission, and it just kind of blew me away.
Right.
Because it was like, I had not really seen a lot of, and when I say adult, I don't mean like, dirty movies.
Sure,
like a movie with
serious.
A heavy
grown
theme.
Grown up
movie.
Yeah,
and it
this
just
was serious business.
It just kind of, you know, it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
The story is about, it's got, we already said Robert De Niro and Jeremy Irons, but it's about this Jesuit priest that are trying to set up this, you've already kind of said this, but set up this mission amongst these people living sort of in the tribal native areas of Paraguay and Argentina.
Yeah,
and so. But they kind of get caught in the crosshairs of this sort of geopolitical thing where the Spaniards and the French are trying to like take over the territory. And so, and there's a story of redemption in it with De Niro, and the acting is just great in this. So, again, I'm very glad Pinky took this film from me because I want him to see it.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
It really is a must see, and it's odd that it's not in more like top. Even I don't even see it much on top 50 lists.
I think it's just gotten forgotten. But the music is great.
Oh man,
the music
is a phenomenal movie.
Ennio Morricone does the music.
Yes,
Ennio Morricone. The same
guy. I forgot to mention that in Mike Tober, he did the music for The Thing, and that was a very high point for me and for The Thing. Anyways,
And you'll be hearing about Mike Tober in about 3 weeks when it comes up.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
Whatever. I mean, whatever. We record these things all out of order. Who knows?
So anyway, my number one is. And as you can see, I have this kind of ongoing martyrdom thing. But anyway, The Mission.
It's like you're a cine martyr.
I could be.
Nice.
I could be. Wow.
You got to be on the show then.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll come join.
We do give you permission to take him for an night.
In fact, and you can pick the film.
Oh wow.
Now the problem with the problem with Dr. Earl is he's a bit technologically.
No, I can run a DVD player.
I'm talking about Skype though. I don't know if you.
Oh, well, no, I might have to figure out something. But
let's go to Atlanta, you know,
or just drive to Atlanta. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll come to Birmingham.
I might have.
Yeah, you need to come. We'd have you on the show. We'd be.
Sitting in studio, it's a whole other experience in studio.
I will. if people have me, I will be there.
We'll work that out.
Okay, Dave can work that out.
The first of the year, we'll have you because I know November and December. We'll figure that out. But my number one.
No, Bills. Stop doing that, Dave.
Bill.
My number one is going to come after
you
Bills.
You can cut the line. That's fine.
No.
Let me finish. My number one is coming after Bills. It's a tease.
Oh, that's what you were going to say? Okay, it's a tease. Okay.
Look at that. Oh, that's awesome. My number one is Leap of Faith.
Oh, great.
Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Steve
awesome.
Martin.
This is an early '90s film. He plays Jonas Nightingale, which is a fly-by-night faith healer.
That's right.
And it kind of employs the same tactics as the true-to-life faith healer Peter Popoff, where he had a little bit of an earpiece, and he would have someone kind of cueing him, played by Deborah Winger, kind of giving him cues on people that are maybe having some issues or things that he needs to focus on. What I got from this film was not so much the faith healer or preacher aspect that Steve Martin played, but how big God is in all of this, and that as much as you want to drive and force things and think that I'm going to make things happen the way I think God wants them to happen, or even making people believe the way that God is acting, that God is so much bigger than that. And that's what I got from this movie is that even though, because what happens is they hit small town from small town, and they kind of do their shtick.
That's right.
And they get a lot of money from folks, but they're stuck in this small town and for a longer period of time. And so they have to kind of extend their show, essentially.
Yes.
But what happens is that things start happening that they can't explain. And some of it is kind of forced by Jonas. And there's other parts of it that it's just like Jonas has nothing to do with that. And you're not sure whether that's God or whether that's just by happenstance. But slowly but surely, you see Jonas wrestling with God about this, and finally, in the end, it's really God taking over. That's what I kind of pulled from it. And it really when you see the trailer of the movie, you kind of think, oh, this is just kind of a funny happy-go-lucky, Steve Martin vehicle, but it's much deeper than that.
That's right.
And I liked it for that, and I saw it for that, and even kind of in the last scene of the movie, and I won't give it all away, but it's just, you kind of just see, he even kind of succumbs to the fact that God is in control of all of this and not him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. That it starts off like he's just playing the crowd, but then he all of a sudden he realizes.
Right.
God's going to kind of like. Have you ever seen?
I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, it's. I mean, I saw it one time in the '90s. Yes. But yeah, I have seen it. Yeah.
It's good. And Steve Martin does a good job with it.
Yeah.
Good call.
Very cool. It's definitely one of those movies that it is not. It's, you think it's going to be just a comedy about with Steve Martin in it, but that's it right. is much more than that.
That's right.
And they a couple of interesting bits about this. They did make this. They made it into a musical on Broadway.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And believe it or not, Michael Keaton was actually cast as the role as Jonas Nightingale, but then but quit, and then they brought Steve Martin in.
Oh wow! Now that I didn't know. Interesting. Yeah. That would have been an interesting Keaton. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, that would have been, yeah.
What year was Leap of Faith?
92.
92, gotcha.
I think.
It was,
that
was
92, yeah.
That
92.
Was right after Batman for him.
Yeah, right after, yeah.
Cool. Before he hit his critically acclaimed series, of recent years.
Right.
My number one, again, not a politically correct film at all, but I think it has a great take on religion, and that is Dogma with Kevin Smith.
I love Dogma.
I love the story it tells. I love how it presents itself and how it doesn't take religion so seriously. It presents God as an entity who is not religion, who is God. Alanis Morissette is God in this movie. The angels come down. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck as Loki and Bartleby, and they're trying to get into heaven, even though they've been cast out. And
right.
And there's a whole Catholicism thing there, and you've got the chosen one, Linda Fiorentino, playing Bethany, and of course you've got Jay and Silent Bob trying to protect her, and with Alan Rickman in the movie as well. Which, funny thing, Jason Lee. I'm sorry?
Jason Lee.
And Jason Lee, too.
I love Jason Lee, and I don't know where he's gone in the recent years. He needs to make a comeback.
He's done a couple series here and there.
Because there was a time there that he was actually kind of a big deal.
And Alvin and the Chipmunks,
Jason Mewes.
He's not going to see too much because he broke away from Scientology recently.
That's true. They may have
He's done for then.
Jason Mewes, actually, who plays Jay, was so nervous about Alan Rickman, he actually took acting classes and to learn his lines to make sure he had everything down because he did not want to screw up in front of Alan Rickman.
Really?
Yeah, he was so like, I don't want. He's so scared of messing up in front of Alan Rickman.
That's interesting.
Which I think we all would be. Yeah. Rest in peace.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a great movie, and again, it's a hard R, lots of language, and don't go in there with your religion on your sleeve, going, I'm going to be offended at everything, because you will be offended if you do that. But enjoy the movie, enjoy the message, believe in what you believe in. You know, we know what the story is in the Bible. We know this is not the biblical story, but it's a very good story nonetheless. Yeah. So,
My number one, and you know, gosh, looking at my list here, my first four have been somewhat serious, so I had to go Nuns on the Run as my number. I'm just kidding.
Really? I started typing Nuns on the Run.
Pinky kind of stole my
Robbie
thunder
Coltrane.
In a way, but my number one is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, nice.
Which I think is far more religious than...
There is some more spiritual type lessons.
And it's more between the father-son relationship, you know, Sean Connery Harrison Ford, the relationship there, you could tell that, you know, Henry Jones Sr. was much more religious than his son. Mm-hmm. And so there that dichotomy between those two characters, to me, was the special part of that movie, that relationship. And you know, it really took Indiana Jones till the end of the movie before he really saw where his dad was coming from. And I thought that was a much more, I don't know, I just got a lot out of that relationship. Mm-hmm.
A leap of faith.
And you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's just some silly popcorn flick. But I don't know. There was a lot of deep stuff there with the father and son relationship, and I got a lot out of it. So that is my true number one, is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
That's a good pick, and I thought about putting that one down instead.
Yeah, yeah.
But my
the
number
penitent man will
my
pass.
Number one is going to be The Exorcist,
1973. Oh, wow.
Nice. Now, that's on my honorable mentions.
Yeah, now when
it is very serious.
Yeah, very much so. Because when people think of this film, they obviously think of the little girl that's been possessed by the demon.
Sure, sure.
Uh-huh. That is not what this movie's about. It's about the young priest struggling with his faith. We all have at some point in our lives.
Yeah.
And about how the situation just helps him become closer to Christ, I believe, at the very end of
the
movie.
So, yeah.
And just like, so I guess it's like God works in mysterious ways, I guess, is how you can look at this film. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was very, very well done. And I get more out of this film the more I see it. I watch it about
it's
every October.
Movie. Yeah.
It's a dark film, obviously. I mean,
sure.
Yeah. I would still say this is the scariest film I have ever seen.
It is, yeah.
It is like way better than Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah. So much better. But I mean, Bird just loves us.
That you're going to be talking about at the end of October? Is that right?
Yeah, but
have you seen it yet?
I don't know when I'm going to talk about it.
But just a fantastic movie.
No, I agree, Pinky, because I had it down with my top honorable mention, because I went back and watched it, I don't know, 5 years ago, and I was like, wait a minute. This is a lot of. I didn't realize that there was so much focus on that young priest. And
he's the main character.
Yeah,
of the story.
He is. And he's trying
not,
to decide.
Not the girl.
Isn't he trying to decide if he should stay in the priesthood or something?
Yeah,
priest in the hood.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. So
marvelous film.
Wow, that's a good list, guys.
Are we going to do honorable mentions?
Yes. Yeah. What you got over there?
So I had The Exorcist. I had To End All Wars, 2004, which is a really great movie about it's kind of like a concentration camp movie, but about it's a true story.
Right.
I have The Gospel of John, which is The Gospel of John. And then there's a 1953 Martin Luther biopic that's really good. And then Les Mis, I think, has some really good spiritual things.
Oh, yeah.
Bill, do you have any honorable mentions?
I would throw in Heaven Can Wait.
Yes.
With Warren Beatty, with the original Los Angeles Rams, right?
Yeah. The OG. Yeah.
Yeah. The Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks and Time Bandits.
Nice.
Oh, Time
well
Bandits.
Done. Yeah. Yeah.
We're big fans of that here.
I picked up Passion of the Christ, Children of the Corn.
Nice juxtaposition.
I'm a courageous apologist. I like the movie Courageous. I don't care what you say. Kendrick Brothers, maybe they can't act or can't direct, but I like it. I like the last 20 minutes of Sister Act. I think that musical interlude is fantastic. I'm not kidding.
Wow,
Elizabeth Olsen in Martha, Marcy, May Marlene, where she escapes a religious cult.
Oh, is that what that's about?
Yeah.
I never knew.
Martha, Marcy, May Marlene.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's a mouthful. Times fast.
I really never knew what that about what that was about.
And I also listed Going Clear as well.
On my, okay. So, yeah. Well, I had The Apostle written down. I had Spotlight written down. Defending Your Life, Leap of Faith. The only other one that we haven't said, Bowfinger. I absolutely love Bowfinger because
Wait, Bowfinger.
Yeah, because it's like Scientology. It's all about
Welcome to Mindhead.
Yeah, it's all about.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Really good pick. Yeah. Or is it like that?
Chubby Rain.
Yeah, exactly.
Such a good film.
It is. It is. I love it.
It made me cry. I was laughing so hard in the theater.
Yeah. Gosh. Now, yeah. God, my night's ruined. Now I have to go watch that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bowfinger. I mean, it's.
Put a awesome. Black coffee on, boys.
Yeah.
Welcome to Mindhead.
Yeah. I mean, I never got my copy of that back from Jason Lazaro. If you're listening, I need that back.
Your video set?
Yeah. The VHS. Yeah.
Of Bowfinger.
Yeah. Well, it's the principle of the matter.
Yeah.
So. It might have been a DVD. I don't know. I think it was VHS. Yeah.
Yeah, it was VHS. That and The Apostle, I think.
Yeah, he had both of those.
Yeah, somebody's got my copy of Stephen Schwartz Chapman's Signs of Life. I had to go buy another copy.
Oh, and it, who knows where
and
It Takes Two
I think
is.
You stole my copy of It Takes Two with Mary-Kate
I've
Nash.
I've never even, I've, nope, don't even yeah, know what happened to
I don't even know what that is.
I will say this, David. Was it The Appointment that you told me about? The
Appointment.
The Appointment.
The Christian movie? It was one of those Christian movies, or is it In the Harvest? It was like one of those movies, like we were talking about offline, and it was like, and I went on to eBay, and it's like, I have to have this movie.
Was this me you were talking to?
Yeah.
The Appointment. Oh, is that the movie where the girl meets a guy at a dinner table, and he's Jesus or something? Is that the?
I don't know, but I've never heard of that movie.
I don't know. There's like one of those movies, like you were like at some point, like that's, I guess the beauty of today, you know, in this day and age, it's like you can find any movie.
Right.
It's like, I can't, you know, if someone has a copy of it, I'm going to.
I did
know.
Mention Thief in the Night, and I thought about
that was like it.
1973 or whatever. So
Thief in the Night. Wow. That's a yeah. throwback.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a Billy Graham movie.
Pinky,
isn't it?
Do you have any honorable mentions?
You mentioned most of them. The Book of Eli, Dogma, and There Will Be Blood.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's a good call.
Those are my honorable mentions there.
Nice. Well done.
All right. So we're now going to go to one of America's favorite segments.
Oh, yeah.
This is called Pretty in Pink. Here's how Pretty in Pink works. Pinky, we have assigned Pinky, Young Pinky, a movie from the 80s or 90s, a classic film, to see and to watch for the first time. And he gets to watch it, talk about it for a second, and then we will go around the room and decide whether he liked it or not. So, Pinky, what movie were you assigned?
Mikey assigned me Blazing Saddles.
That's right.
Wow. So talk a little bit about this movie before you give any indication of whether you liked it or not.
It's a Mel Brooks classic, and basically what it's about is these people, they're building a railroad, and it's about to go through a town, so it's market value is about to skyrocket.
Yeah.
So, of course, this one rich guy wants to own the town while it's really cheap before it gets real expensive. So in order for the property value to go down, he assigns a black sheriff to look over the town.
Yeah.
Right. Nice.
Gene Wilder.
Yep. Gene Wilder, yeah. Yeah. Of course, Mel Brooks. I mean, just, yeah.
Cleavon Little,
so
right?
Here's how we kind of rate this film is we kind of give a score of 1 to 5. 1 being he hated it. 5 being he absolutely loved it. 3 is kind of like he's indifferent. And then 2 and 4 is kind of somewhere in there. So we kind of go around the room. Well, I mean, 2 would be like he didn't hate it, but he didn't like it.
I think that's too many numbers, personally. You know.
So anyway, we go around the room and kind of, Mikey, what do you think?
Oh, I think he loved it. I've got to go a 5 on it. I mean, I think he absolutely loved
it. Yeah, I'm going to go 5. I think he loved it. I think Pinky appreciates these movies for what they are because he's watched enough movies to not take things too seriously. And I think he's going to say, this movie is so offensive, it would never be made today, which is true, and I loved it. So, Bill, what do you think?
I'm going to say that Pinky starts out possibly at a 4 initially because he's not sure where it's going to go, and it slowly kind of snowballs, and he's slowly getting toward a 5 until the point where they break the fourth wall, and then his mind explodes, and at that point, it becomes a 5. And he begins to then grab every person that he can see and say, you have to see this movie that I just saw that's called Blazing Saddles. And everybody's going to look at him going, wow, what are you talking about? This movie's been out forever.
So yeah, 4.5? Exactly.
No, a 5 all the way.
Doctor,
so I'm going to go opposite of all you guys just so in case I want to go 4. I mean, I think he liked it, but I don't think it was to the level of. Yeah, I think he was like, well, this is good, but it's a little on the silly side, and, right. you know.
So I'm going to go 4, just to kind of be a little different from you guys.
Pinky, what do you think?
I'm also just like funneling mind like tricks on him right now, just to make sure
now,
that
Pinky,
he understands the volume and all everything that's around this, that he has to pick the right choice in this. I'm not saying that life is dependent upon this, but
it could.
I'm just
you
letting
never
it out
know.
There.
It could depend.
They have a lot of hitmen in Georgia, so we're just letting
there is. Yeah. Including the Kendrick brothers. So.
Pinky?
I mean, how can you not just love this film?
Yeah, exactly.
This movie is pretty in pink. Yeah.
All the way.
Holy crap. I mean, I was laughing all throughout this movie. Yeah. And mainly because, as Dave said, this movie would never be made today.
No.
Ever.
No.
And I think that's why I loved it. It's just like, it's so offensive and it's so just brilliant. And I mean, holy crap. I loved every single second of this film.
Yep.
I had to pause the movie when what's his face punches the horse.
Mongo.
I had to pause the film. I was laughing so hard. I was crying. I mean, it was
awesome.
It was just phenomenal.
Good call. All right.
The toll booth is like, all right, we got to go back and get a shitload of dimes.
Oh, man. Slim Pickens. Yeah. I mean, any movie with Slim Pickens.
Yeah. Slim Pickens.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal.
When did we get, Slim Pickens is dead, but if he wasn't dead, we'd get him on the show. all right, here's the movie I'm assigning for you for Pity and Pink, and I hope you haven't seen it. To save her ill son, a field mouse must seek the aid of a colony of intelligent rats in whom she has a deeper link to who she ever suspected, the secret of Nim from 1990.
Oh, wow. I found out
it was on Amazon Prime today, actually.
Oh, nice.
The Secret of Nim, a classic film from of our childhoods. And I know fellow podcasters Jedi Schwa and Chaz Bazaar are going to be going nuts over this one because I know they love it too. So Secret of Nim, that is your Pity and Pink.
Awesome.
Nice.
All right. So real quick, I want to talk about RetroZap.com is where we're located. And we are very happy to be a part of the RetroZap Podcasting Network and some of the other shows they have feature Skywalking Through Neverland, which is Disney and Star Wars. You love them together. The aforementioned Techno Retro Dads with Chaz and Schwa. Anything about the 70s and 80s pop culture, you're going to love it. Of course, the Brews and Blasters is kind of the flagship show. Blab of the Hutt, also Star Wars news and discussion as well. And an Animaniac cast. Anyway, episode by episode of the Animaniacs, which is remarkable because that show was huge when I was in college. So loved it. So go on to RetroZap.com, subscribe to the feed and get all these shows. Pick out the ones you like, which obviously will be all of them. Listen to our show again after you subscribe to ours. Go to iTunes and also... give us a plug. Give us some reviews. We'd love that as well. Now, Bill, let's talk about Cinemartyrs real quick. When is that episode? Usually weekly, but I haven't had one come out in a little while, have we?
We've been on a bit of a lag because one of our hosts his daughter's been born.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Yeah. So yeah, we have Matthew's is a new dad. So that's been. But we've got an episode shipping this week. We'll probably be going back to about every 2 weeks.
Okay.
But that'd be looking that in your feed about every Thursday, every other Thursday.
Cool. And that's Cinemartyrs, yeah, right. Like Cinema Martyrs.
Cinemartyrs, Cinemartyrs.
And Bill, where can people find you online if you want to be found on the internet?
If you're looking for me on the Twitter, you can find me at Cybolt, and that's CYB0LT. I'm also on the Facebook as well as LinkedIn. I've also keep up on the was on the Tumblr and also on some of the other MySpace and
Zanga, LiveJournal,
AOL, those kinds of places. So.
Find Pinky at The Fifth Finger. Find Mikey at The Michael Nip. And I am at Dave Dollar. Of course, find us at The Deucecast online. TheDeucecast.com is our podcast website. We'd love you to go there. Find the old shows and stuff. We've got all of our episodes up, all 246 of them now. So go there, get show notes and everything like that. Find the ones you want to listen to, which are obviously all of them. Anyway, so thank you very much for Tommy for joining us as a producer. High five from Sean. Dr. Earl, thank you here being once again. He is off the grid, so don't try to contact Earl. You can only find him on this show only. If you want to talk to him,
that's not totally
send us
true,
a message.
Yeah.
We'll get it to him through his cabin in the woods or whatever. Bill, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, for Pinky, for Mikey, for myself, I am Dave, and that is a wrap.
Well, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
a little childish and stupid, but then so is high school.